Morning decisions. A creamy mocha frappuccino drink, a sweet vanilla, maybe a smooth caramel, or that white chocolate mocha. Whichever you choose, delicious coffee awaits. Start your day with bottled Starbucks frappuccino drinks. Pick up a bottle near you wherever you buy your groceries.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Let's kick off now with the comments and judgment by a High Court judge, Justice Michael Toomey, yesterday. He criticised what he calls, and I quote, inappropriate practice of solicitors referring their clients to medical professionals. Justice Toomey was referring to a case where he said there were 18 different professionals involving lawyers, doctors, engineers engaged in supporting and defending two personal injury claims arising from a traffic incident. The solicitor representing the clients of this particular case was medical negligence and personal injury solicitor, of course, for Vicky Phelan, Kian O'Carroll of Kian O'Carroll Solicitors, who joins me on the line. And we're also joined by Peter Boland, the director for Alliance of Insurance. Welcome to the programme. Kian, I know you well, and of course, you've done outstanding work in relation to the cervical cancer scandal. What was your reaction to the comments of Justice Michael Toomey?
Good morning, Ivan. Excuse me. I was shocked, I have to say. I think this is a bolt out of the blue. In this case, the issues weren't debated during the trial and submissions weren't sought. And I think if submissions had been sought, as would be usual on a point like this, the practice, as it does exist, would have been explained to the court. And I think the reality is that both sides in each personal injuries case find themselves asking doctors to examine an injured person or a claimant. We find ourselves asking doctors to examine that person and to give an independent professional expert report for the benefit of the court. It is not some kind of partisan thing. An expert is an independent person, and to suggest otherwise impugns the doctor as much as it impugns the solicitor or any other lawyer involved in preparing the case. It has been necessary over a long number of years to ensure that your client is properly represented to do two things. Number one, you must ensure that their injury, as they set it out for you, is correctly documented for the court. And secondly, you must then ensure that those experts or doctors who are going to give that evidence are in a position to attend court. Because if your doctor won't attend court, and for obvious reasons of busy professional practice, you can see how that would arise, well, you really can't then present that evidence. You build your case and you find yourself for the trial being unable to present it. So in those situations, you must ensure that you are not limited solely to the treating doctor. And the other point I would make is that why should the plaintiff be put at a disadvantage? Why should the injured party be put at a huge disadvantage to the insurance company, who can pick and choose their doctors, their expert witnesses, as they see fit and according to their availability, so that on the day of the trial, they have their witnesses and you don't have yours? So for all those reasons, I think this practice is correct and proper, and to fail to document your client's injury would effectively amount to professional negligence on my part.
Okay, and I get your job, your professional requirement is to be fearlessly on the side of your client. But what the judge made reference to, and he used the words minor tip in relation to this two-car contact, he said the overuse of expert evidence. So I fully accept, you've got to validate whatever your claim is with a professional opinion. But it seems that 18 professionals involved on both sides of the case only adds to the cost, surely.
Well, the number of 18, by the way, and it's an interesting exercise that was performed here. I mean, that's not the plaintiff having 18 experts. The plaintiff had an orthopaedic consultant and a psychiatrist, and there was a GP involved as well. That's it. Okay, so the number 18 is looking at all the other people involved, whether they're solicitors, barristers, doctors for the insurance company, the Personal Injuries Assessment Board, who, by the way, sent only one of these two plaintiffs was represented by my firm, but the Personal Injuries Assessment Board independently sent this person to a psychiatrist. There's nothing wrong with doing that, it seems, but yet there's something wrong about us doing that to ensure that the injury is fully understood and documented. And these are independent experts, and I would just repeat that point.
And Cian, you know, I've been to the High Court myself, I'm familiar with it, and I think as a rule of thumb, maybe with both sides involved, it's $100,000 a day for a full hearing. Would you disagree with that?
I certainly would, and our practice is involved in some of the lengthy, in fact, the lengthiest trials that come before the High Court. It is nothing like that, but I will not for a moment suggest that it is not an expensive place to go.
So my point is, whatever the figure is, surely that tilts the whole system towards trying to settle the case, which really suits the plaintiffs. In other words, well, even if we win in court and costs are awarded to each side, or if it's a score draw, you know, that actually sort of can feed a culture of compensation.
I don't think that is fair, and I think that's shown by the fact that the number of cases being taken has almost collapsed over the last 3 years, because a number of steps have been taken to address any concerns which the insurance industry have. In particular, we've seen over the last 10 years of my practice, you see a continual decline in the level of legal costs, despite the fact that the overall environment is one of things getting more expensive. And most importantly, the number of actions actually taken has gone from 33,000 in 2019 to just 18,000, almost half in this current year. And that is partly a result of all of these various reforms that are coming in. And the most important reform has been the huge slashing of the level of damages that is being awarded to injured parties. And whether you think the level of damages was too high or adequate or too low up to now, you cannot dispute the fact that they have been halved through the judicial guidelines, which were brought in by a consensus of the judiciary about 18 months ago. And that has had the effect of dramatically reducing, as I say, almost halving the average level of damages in cases.
Okay. Cian, please stay with us. Peter Boland, you've been a long-standing campaigner in this area, the director for the Alliance for Insurance Reform. It sounds from what Cian says, it's almost job done that you have achieved critical reforms in reducing the number of cases that go to court and the level of awards.
Good morning, Ivan. There's no evidence that the awards in courts have dropped yet. What we're seeing is plenty of evidence that PIAB assessments, which is obviously PIAB being the first step in a personal injury case, there's plenty of evidence that their assessments are dropping. But there's no evidence as yet that the courts are complying with the judicial guidelines, and we're waiting to see such evidence. But just going back to the case at hand, clearly I wasn't in court, so I'm not in a position to comment on the specifics of the case. And I note that according to newspaper reports this morning, that case may now be further appealed. But the detail of the judgment from the High Court judge in this case did not come as a bolt out of the blue for us, because it reflects issues which have been repeated in the High Court on numerous occasions. And ultimately, it boils down to the same figures that we have been trawling through for a number of years now, Ivan. So essentially, the latest update from last month from the central bank on motor personal injury claims, of which this was one, show that if a case is settled at PIAB, it delivers an award to someone who suffers a minor injury, and it does so for a total cost of €917. That's the total legal fees applicable to the average claim for a minor injury through PIAB. The heart of the matter is that when that case is litigated, there's only a minor uplift for the claimant. but the legal fees rocket to €16,685, and the claimant has to wait a further 2 years beyond the PIAB assessment. So essentially, and of course, that is unaffordable. Society cannot afford it, and the implications of that system are all around us in terms of voluntary groups, charities, sports clubs, and small businesses just not being able to afford insurance because of the way that personal injury claims are processed and the costs around them. And in a lot of ways, it boils down to a comment that you've made already, and the judge in the case that's received such publicity over the last couple of days said the level of cost being thrown at defendants is why it often makes economic sense for a defendant to pay, say, €10,000 to settle an unmeritorious claim in the High Court, rather than spending tens of thousands of euro in unrecoverable legal costs in winning the case.
Cian, if I could come back to you, I was fascinated by what you said, that the case is going down from 33,000 to 18,000. Could you maybe talk us through? So I come into you, I say I've been involved in an accident, my back is in a bad way. What circumstances would you say, oh, I think you should go to court, or I think you should go to PIAB, you know, which, you know, Peter is arguing is a cheaper, quicker way of dealing with it. Like, I would have thought if I was you, Cian, that you're going to get money if we go to court. You're not going to maybe get money if we go to PIAB. Explain to me that process, please.
Excellent question, because you don't have a choice, Ivan. If you come into me with an accident of any kind except an injury that's been inflicted through the course of medical treatment, you are obliged to go to the injuries board. There is no route to court, and you cannot initiate court proceedings until you have an authorization from the Personal Injuries Assessment Board saying you have gone through their process. So in that sense, what Peter is saying is perhaps factually correct, but he's not presenting the true picture. Individuals who are injured must go through the injuries board. Then we cooperate with the injuries board. You come to the end of their process and they make an assessment. An individual is entitled then, I say, and the law says, to consider that assessment and say, well, is that fair or not? If it's fair, I accept it, and that's the end of the matter. If it's not fair, and I feel I should have the right to challenge that assessment because the injury is going to affect my life for the rest of my life, perhaps, well, then I can bring proceedings to the High Court if I wish, but I do so at my own peril. I have to prove my case.
But that wasn't quite the question I asked. The question I asked was the solicitor's perspective, because they're saying, well, if the case is settled and doesn't go to court, I'm not going to be clocking up the hours and the fees. Are lawyers not incentivized to say, I think you shouldn't take this?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but to be honest, my experience of the solicitor's perspective is what is in the best interest of the client. Because if you look after your client and you do your very best for them, I don't think you have to worry about fees. You will be busy and you will be rewarded for the work you do. But to answer the question you have asked, if there were a calculation made in somebody's head about what's more profitable for me, that's effectively what you're saying.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah. Well, you cannot make that calculation. Wrong though that calculation would be to do. You cannot make it because you're obliged to go to the injuries board. Okay. Then, if you're advising your client on whether the injuries board assessment is fair or reasonable, you also cannot make an assessment which might suit you. Because if you bring a case to the High Court and you don't beat the Personal Injuries Assessment Board award, that award acts as a type of tender where costs will be awarded against you. Not in your favour, against you and against your client, if you don't do better than that award, if you go to court.
Okay, Peter, surely that's a fair point, that if the solicitor says to Mrs. Murphy, I think you should go on to court, basically, he better win then, you know what I mean? Because he's running the risk that he's given her bad advice if they get less or the same amount for they would have gotten in PIAB.
Well, the fact is that a tiny minority of cases go to court, Ivan. The vast majority are settled privately in private deals between the insurers and the plaintiff solicitor. So that doesn't really come into play except in under 3% of claims. And Keane is correct. The fact is that the individual does have a right to litigate. But the individual doesn't benefit from litigation in personal injury claims for minor injuries, and neither does society. The only sector that does benefit is the lawyers.
Right. And the other question I want to ask you, Cian, is these panels of experts, not lawyers now, I'm talking about medical people, and you made the very valid point that people have to actually turn up in court. Does it actually work that you have a panel taking medical negligence cases or proving psychiatric consequences on an accident or proving the level of disability, that there's actually a professional cohort of people who do little else other than this type of court work?
Well, panels would generally refer to the Personal Injuries Assessment Board, who have a panel of doctors, and then insurance companies would tend to have their panels. You could describe the plaintiff's selection of doctors as being from a known list of doctors who, for example, I would know doctors who would probably, such as orthopaedic consultants, who would make themselves available to attend court as long as it's in Dublin, for example, or as long as it's in Cork. So, of course it works, because if you don't get one of those doctors to examine your client and prepare an independent professional report on what's wrong with them, well, as I said before, you turn up in court with your case on the day you have to do your job for your client, and you cannot do it. And the insurance company, and I don't fault them for this, they will seize on that advantage and they will say, no, we're not accepting that report from Dr. X. We will not allow that to go into evidence unless he or she is here. And if he or she cannot attend, you are now left at a massive disadvantage. And honestly, if you have to look a plaintiff in the eye, if you look your client in the eye on the day of court and say, I'm very sorry, but your case is now only going to be half presented because I restricted the selection of medical experts to, for example, your GP, well then you have not done a correct and proper professional job for your client.
Okay. Finally, Peter, are you happy with the expert panel arrangements?
Look, experts are often essential if a personal injury claim gets to court. Very often we're amazed at the type of claims that get as far as court when they should have been settled at PIAB, and there's no additional benefit to the plaintiff in taking it as far as court. But as a number of judges have now said, it is inappropriate to bypass a patient's or a plaintiff's GP in order to seek out consultants. When you're looking for medical advice, you go to a GP, and when you're looking for legal advice, you go to a solicitor. And short-circuiting either of those, we would regard as inappropriate.
All right. My thanks. Latterly there, Peter Boland, Director of the Alliance for Insurance Reform, and of course, Cian O'Carroll of Cian O'Carroll Solicitors, who is, of course, a household name at this stage. Thank you both indeed for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Joining us on The Pat Kenny Show.
First decision of the morning. A creamy mocha frappuccino drink? Or will we ease into the day with a sweet vanilla? Maybe a smooth caramel? Ooh, what about that white chocolate mocha? No matter which flavor you choose, delicious coffee awaits. Better coffee starts a better day. Start with bottled Starbucks Frappuccino drinks. Pick up a bottle near you wherever you buy your groceries.